Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to make some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. How many job losses does it take to stop a raging bull? A bull that produced the best month for the stock market in 33 years? Well, I think we might have found out today. It looks like 30 million. Yep, just as we learned that we had the best rally since January of 1987, an admittedly inauspicious year, but not until the fall, and COVID cases increased by just 1.2%. That's the slowest pace this month. We also got some incredibly bad news. More than 3.8 million jobless claims, bringing the total to more than 30 million over the past 6 weeks. The Dow tumbled 288 points, the S&P lost 0.92%, and the Nasdaq shed 0.28% today. This was an explosive situation. The market was overbought, and we got hit with yet another Great Depression-sized unemployment number. That is not exactly confidence-inspiring for me. I don't know about you. Okay, even when we saw it a great labor market like we did before the pandemic, I'd still be concerned that after this run from the bottom, stocks have gotten too hot. We're now at plus 7.2% in the S&P short-range oscillator. That's the one I swear by. This is the one that called the bottom when it fell to minus 20s in March. Anything above plus 5 is overbought. A 7.2 reading makes me concerned, which is why we've been selling for my charitable trust, which you can follow along by joining the ActionAlertsPlus.com club. Meanwhile, there are lots of people who are itching for an excuse to take profits. Today's jobless claims number gave them one, and there'll be a lot more bad news behind it. All right, the big question, does this market still have enough fire left in the embers to keep going? Well, let's think about what happened. What fueled this move from the market's lows? First, we got ridiculously oversold for days on end, and that's what this is. Okay, days on end, this was some of the ugliest down to up volume, meaning number of shares sold to bought in terms of on the decline that I have ever seen in my 40-year career. And this what I just call is just unsustainable. That is just way too much negativity. After the spectacular run, you know, that prop is gone. You can't seriously argue that this market's too pessimistic anymore. We've been rallying like crazy. Now, that doesn't mean we have to revisit the lows. I don't think we'll see this again. I don't. As a matter of fact, I think it's highly unlikely that that'll happen. I mean, you can only go so far, though, on an oversold bounce. Not here, but not there. Second, when things got out of hand, the Federal Reserve decided to take a Malcolm X by any means necessary approach to propping up the economy. Fed Chief Jay Powell wanted to prevent the wave of bankruptcies that was about to wash over America, and he did it. He told us that if necessary, the Fed would even buy distressed debt, junk bonds, so that troubled companies would be able to stay alive. Once he made that commitment, those companies have had a much easier time raising money. We've had only a trickle of bankruptcies instead of a torrent. I think that is the right call. COVID-19 is nobody's fault, right? There's no moral hazard here. There's no danger of inflation either. This thing is devastating. Anything that minimizes the economic damage, I say, is worth doing. But we've known about the Fed's moves for a while now. You don't keep buying stocks on the same old information, do you? At a certain point, it's what we call baked in, okay? Baked in. This is baked in. This is baked in. Let's keep going. Third, we thought our healthcare system would be overwhelmed by COVID-19, but thanks to the lockdown, that hasn't happened. We flattened the curve. We avoided the worst-case scenario. But again, that was a reason to buy 2 weeks ago, not a reason to buy now. Fourth, until yesterday, we didn't have any drugs that could fight this vicious mad dog of a virus. Yesterday, we learned that Gilead's got an antiviral called remdesivir that gets you out of the hospital faster. That's really its stock and trade. It's not a cure, but it could be the first component of a cocktail that makes COVID a lot more manageable. Dr. Anthony Fauci compared it to the AZT breakthrough in the fight against AIDS more than 30 years ago. Fauci's been noncommittal about every other potential treatment, but he sounded downright enthusiastic about remdesivir. And that's why the market exploded higher yesterday. Could we have more upside from this drug? Absolutely not. It is already baked in. We need more anti-pandemic fuel, especially when you consider that we're about to reopen the economy, and that creates a whole new level of risk if we let our guard down. There are things we could do to lessen the risk, but in most of the country, it's still very difficult to even get tested, including New York City. That's right, the worst hotspot in the country, and you got to cool your heels before you can even find out if you're sick. We have no way of telling who's been exposed because we haven't set up any sort of contact tracing system. Masks, yeah, not enough. CDC says that they're worth wearing, especially if you can get those fancy N95s. Costco just made masks mandatory, effective May 4th. Don't go there without one. Since the crisis started, I've regarded Costco, not the government, but Costco as the gold standard here, because I followed that company for years, and they genuinely take the safety of their employees and their customers more seriously than anyone on earth. Put it all together, and I think the good news on the coronavirus front, well, already priced in, which leaves us with earnings. Now, so far, we've discovered that the quarterly reports aren't that bad, but that's because January and February were so strong, BC, before COVID. They offset a miserable March. The final month of the quarter and the little we've seen of April have been downright hideous with a few exceptions, notable ones like Microsoft, which is uniquely situated to benefit from the stay-at-home economy, or Facebook, which saw some green shoots in April. As we go through earnings season, I think these hideous March numbers will start to take up more oxygen as a prelude to an even worse April. Apple and Amazon just reported solid quarters. Both stocks got hit in after hours trading, though. Amazon, much harder because, well, they had to spend a lot of money to build out new capacity and cope with the pandemic. How could that have been a surprise? Apple had to pull its guidance, though, and their sales are bouncing back in April after a tough March. And I thought the quarter was beautiful. But when you hear pull guidance, what can I say? People get upset. These are some of the best companies in the world. Apple boosted its dividend and buyback. Talk about conviction. And even though their stocks are having some trouble, I like both. OK, I would buy them. They're going to get hit. All right. I would buy them, particularly Apple, which I say own, don't trade. Don't forget, we got 5G coming down the pike, too. All that said, the rally from the lows, it made perfect sense, as did a big chunk of last month's crash. But now, the bottom line is we're going to need something new, something different. You know what? I don't know what it'd be. Without it, though, the market is simply stretched at these levels after a fantastic run. And if we rally without some new positives, and judging by the market's muted reaction to tremendous numbers from Microsoft yesterday and great sales from Amazon and great earnings from Apple, I'm not going to blame you, and I can't blame anyone since my Chapel Trust has been doing it. Ringing the register. Kyle in New York. Kyle!
Hey, Jim. How you doing, buddy?
All right, Kyle. How about you?
Pretty good. Got home from work, having a beer, doing all right.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's like the old days. That's like the old days. Don't throw a party, though. Don't go having that much fun, all right?
No, definitely not.
Good. I want to be sure you didn't have that much fun. All right, because I'm not. What's up?
So I bought Wayfair 5 weeks ago.
Whoa, then you're a smart guy.
$25.96. So I'm up about 400%. So I'm wondering if I should dump it or just ride it out.
All right, listen to me. Listen to me. You take out your cost basis tomorrow morning, okay? I don't care where you take it. Just take it. And then you know what? Take that money, and I want you to go buy, when the store's open, a cashmere sweater. You can celebrate with the rest of us. You can let the rest run. I'm not kidding. But I need that basis taken out. I need to go to Aiden in New Hampshire. Aiden.
Jimmy Chill, what's going on?
I'm the chill man, although the wife is a little on the fence about the chill situation. Go ahead. What's up?
I got a question about Sabre Corp.
Really?
They signed a 10-year partnership with Google to have them handle parts of their IT system.
Okay, yeah.
It's trading at 22 and change since then, and it's shot down to around 7 where it's currently sitting. Sabre provides tech solutions to the travel and tourism industries. So what do you think about this as a potential play without getting directly into those highly volatile markets?
I can't go there. I don't know what travel's going to be like. And, you know, what you're doing there is saying, okay, listen, this one's so low it can bounce. And like, that makes sense. I mean, Carnival went to 8. You know, I mean, some of these things, Norwegian, they do bounce. But I'm going to take a pass. I need to go to Kenny in Kansas. Kenny!
Booyah, Jim. How you doing?
Well, Pop's name is Kenny. I always like Kenny's. What's going on?
Hey, nothing much. Hey, so I'm a long-term investor, and I currently hold stock in AMC. This week, AMC announced they will no longer be showing Universal movies. Universal decided to continue releasing the movies on demand. So do you think that theater stock is a good long-term investment, or should
I work for Comcast, so I thought the high-speed numbers were great. People didn't seem to like the trade, but I don't know. Own the stock. AMC, no. I think Adam Aaron is a genius. He grew up about like 5 minutes from me. But I'm not going for the hard money. I don't want to go for the hard money. I want to go for the easier money. AMC is the harder money. Sabre is the harder money. And by the way, Wayfair is the hard money too, or else I wouldn't tell them to take a little off the table. All right, the market is just too stretched. It is. Let's just call it as we see it. It's okay. I've been pretty bullish. It's too stretched. We raised some cash. It's all right. No sin. Oh, man, buddy, tonight, most dentists are closed to help limit the spread of coronavirus. You try to get to see a dentist, they won't let you. It's closed. Well, what does that mean for a company like Align Technology? And what does it mean in the future? Talking to the CEO. Then I'm revealing a new defensive play that you should put on your radar, especially when I went over this checklist. It's more attractive. And more employees are working from home. How is an old favorite and friend, Juniper Networks, faring? I'm talking with the CEO after earnings. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Of one of my all-time favorites, Align Technology here. The company that makes Invisalign braces is right in the blast zone of the pandemic. It's hard enough getting a dental appointment for something essential right now. Anything elective, well, forget about it. Teeth straightening, off the table. Now, Align was already facing real competition before the virus hit, which is why the company issued some tepid guidance in January. Then the lockdowns went into effect. The stock was eviscerated, plummeting from 277 at its February highs to 128 mid-March. Since then, though, this stock's made a comeback, especially as Wall Street's gotten more sanguine about betting on stocks that should benefit as we came out of quarantine. Then the company reported, again, tepid numbers. Let's call them that last night. Nobody really cared, though, about the sales and earnings miss. We all knew the first quarter couldn't be good. However, management, to some degree, gave mixed commentary on the state of its global operations, and the stock declined 2.6% today. So should we be worried here, or is this just a predictable pullback, given how much the stock had run in recent weeks, a lot like the stocks that I talked about at the top of the show? Let's take a closer look with Joe Hogan, the president and CEO of Align Technology. We'll learn more about the quarter and the company's possibility. Mr. Hogan, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Hey, Joe, I got to tell you, I figured you were going to have just a terrible quarter, frankly, because you can't get in to see a dentist unless there's something that requires you. Well, I don't even know how you get in. Everybody knew that. We almost have a healthcare recession because it's everything that's elective is off the table. How were you able to pull off this number, which I regard as very solid, given the fact that you're not supposed to go to a dentist to get your teeth straightened?
Well, you know, Jim, the first thing is, you know, we have a real-time business. We carry no finished goods inventory, so it's real-time. You know, we're a mass-customized business. So we were cruising along outside of China. We were moving along really well and actually ahead of guidance up until mid-March. And that's when the market really fell out from underneath us, and about 70% of the dental offices were closed around the world. And so it was a really mixed quarter. It was a really strong quarter going into the last 2 weeks, and then it just fell down.
Yeah, but I think you could say that China, it's a precursor. China was bad at the beginning. I know it's not as big as America, but China came back. And I would think that when you open up the electives, it's going to be the same in this country.
You know, that's where we're optimistic, Jim. You know, China's the only mark we have right now because they were first into the tunnel and first out. And right. Remember, China's 8% of our business. It's a very important part. And when you look at new regress January before they went in, and now our order rate is 80 to 85% back in that sense. And not all the areas of China's back. Beijing has been slow, and Hubei have been slow too. Shanghai's been strong. Coastal provinces have been strong. So I'm optimistic about that. And it's a good vector for our businesses as we look at the Western side of the world coming up.
Joe, I'm going to talk about Align in a different way than I typically would. I mean, I love to talk about it because, you know, my daughter loves it and everybody in the selfie generation. I want to think of you as a lot of what happened in Microsoft last night with Satya Nadella. He said every company is now digital. There's no choice. Every company. Now, I was speaking with Mark Benioff before this show because I know that Mark's all his kids have Invisalign, but more important, Salesforce has worked directly with you to become more digital. You are the most digitized company of a company that I've seen last that wasn't, so to speak. Tell us about the revolution of digital that you're doing.
Well, you know, it's all about we really want a digital format that we have. And you think, Jim, we have an end-to-end solution from our iTero scanner, which your daughter knows from the time that you're scanned, all the way to the 3D printing of those aligners. And that digital platform is so important. And I'm glad you mentioned Mark too. We're big Salesforce fans. When you look at how, you know, they've gone to the cloud, have they moved us to the cloud, we move our system to the cloud too. So an end-to-end digital solution. And what's wonderful about this now too is that before these things were nice to have, you know, because it's a lot less invasive procedure from an orthodontic or dentist standpoint than with wires and brackets or traditional ways of analogs that go in the marketplace. With a digital solution like this, you just put patients and doctors and employees less in harm's way. You don't have to visit the doctor's office the most. And so where we were touting this before is productivity and good for patients or whatever, we see it almost as a necessity as we come out of this COVID world.
Well, do you think there'll be a burst of pent-up demand? And do you think the dentists have enough PPE to be able to handle it?
Well, you know, we're making PPE for our dentists too. So we have some downtime in our printing labs right now, and we put together thousands of those things that we're sending out packages to our doctors, and we have access to PPE too. So we think we can help that way. I think there will be a surge in demand. You know, we've had a really strong balance sheet, Jim. We haven't had to make any cutbacks. We haven't lost on capacity piece. We've been able to leverage that too, and we're really prepared for a surge if things come back in that way.
I think it is important that you've clearly made a bit of a no layoff pledge. You're not. If anything, you're probably adding people.
Yeah. In fact, we just added 50 salespeople to China. There's some engineering we had to add too, and we're selective in that sense and responsible. But you know, we gear this business to grow 20-30% a year. And like I mentioned before, no finished goods. You have to be ready to be able to address that demand. There's no buffer between you and your patient base. In your doctor base.
All right. So between the Exocad acquisition and the digital work with Salesforce, can I take off the table the idea that, another company could come in with a knockoff, so to speak, and somehow take companies away, given how proprietary a line is versus where they thought you might have been 2-3 years ago?
Yeah. Jim, there's two parts of that equation. One is from a knockoff standpoint. You know, one is this market's vastly underpenetrated, right? There's 300 million patients out there that want this. Even in the orthodontic segment, the 14 million patients, we're still less than 10% penetrated in that sense. So the demand profile is huge. Secondly, is what's missed is how hard it is to do what we do with this digital platform end to end, from scanner to the algorithm needed to 3D printing and make that work. So I think sometimes on the market, they see someone can make a plastic aligner. There's so much behind, so much software, so much technology behind that piece. It's really hard just to knock us off.
Yeah, I really think it's you put a lot of distance between you and your competitors. Joe, great to see you on the show. And thank you for the no layoff pledge. That's terrific.
Thanks, Jim. Great to talk to you. Thanks
for having me. That's Joe Hogan, Align Technology President and CEO. I haven't felt this good about this company in a long time. I need to see that moat built. I need to see some distance between them and everybody else. Mad Money's back after the break.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
As we wrap up in an insane month where the market soared while the real economy cratered, I think 30 million jobless claims in the last 6 weeks. I don't know. As I said at the top of the show, let's be a little cautious. Now, look, there have been some genuinely positive developments that feel like a light at the end of the tunnel. We've got the antiviral drug that makes COVID less devastating. We're gradually reopening the economy. The new case numbers have plateaued. And between the Fed and the Treasury, all kinds of businesses are getting some assistance that they need to stay afloat. Now, these are meaningful positives, but it doesn't change the fact that we're in a recession, and it doesn't change the fact that we just had a gigantic move off the bottom that really encompasses all of that good news. And when you're in a recession, you know what you need to do? You shouldn't be aggressive. It doesn't work. You should be defensive. And you got to stick with the defensive stocks, like the CPGs, as we call them, the consumer packaged goods place. These stocks are big winners for the year, although they pulled back a bit over the last couple of weeks as Wall Street has gotten more bullish in the economy. Remember, they're buying the oils and buying the airlines, buying the cruise ships. And I see this as a buying opportunity for the likes of Clorox, Colgate-Palmolive. They both report tomorrow morning. Procter and Kimberly, two stalwarts that have already put up excellent numbers. But tonight I've got a new one for you. It's one I haven't talked about at all. And it's just as much of a household name as those the rest of them. And it's called Reynolds Consumer Products. It came public in January. Now, you know them as something that, look, if you pull open a drawer, I don't know, you pull open a drawer in my house, in the kitchen, there it is, it's the Reynolds wrap, right? And then you open underneath the sink, and well, there it is, it's the hefty bags. And then the disposable cups got them. Easy foil, I don't use that stuff, but it's theirs too. Reynolds debuted at the end of January without much fanfare. The deal was sleepy but well-received. When the pandemic hit, the stock rolled over from mid-February through mid-March, like every stock did. Although since then, it's come roaring back, climbing from $24 back up to $32 and changes of today. So could this one have more room to run? I have to tell you, I think this is exactly the kind of company that should be able to thrive in a tough economy where millions of Americans are stuck out of work. And where are they? They're at home. On the other hand, the stock's already rebounded substantially from its lows, and this is a news story, so there could be some hidden pitfalls that make the stock less attractive. And that's why tonight we're going to play a little belated game of Know Your IPO. Yeah, you know, we interview so many people lately, I haven't had a chance to be able to fit this in, but that's okay. Particularly with Colgate tomorrow and Clorox tomorrow, if they're not perfect, this one comes down. So maybe we got to take a real hard look so we can buy it. Let's start with the financials. As consumer packaged goods plays go, Reynolds, well, it isn't much of a growth story. Their annual sales have been stuck at around $3 billion for the past 5 years. In fact, they were down more than 3% last year. How about earnings? Company's net income jumped from $68 million in 2015 to $302 million in 2017, before plunging to $176 million in 2018. The earnings recovered to $225 million last year. That's some impressive 28% growth during a period where revenues were shrinking. Reynolds made it happen by finding ways to cut costs, dramatically boosting its gross margins. Wall Street likes that. You got to remember, the last few years have been a slog for most of the consumer packaged goods industry. I mean, everybody loves Clorox now that COVID-19 has turned our world upside down. But not long ago, they were struggling to grow, too. So they got aggressive about margin expansion. Cutting costs. Reynolds has followed the same trajectory. All right, how about the balance sheet? Reynolds Consumer Products used to belong to Alcoa. I remember when it was used to be Reynolds itself, but you know, Alcoa sold this division to a private equity firm in 2007. Now, we always want to be careful with PE-backed IPOs because they usually have a lot of debt. They layer the debt on them. Reynolds is no exception. It's got $4.2 billion in total debt, although they paid down a decent chunk with the proceeds of the IPO. Fortunately, none of that debt comes due anytime soon. And now that Reynolds is public, I bet the company will use its considerable cash flow to gradually clean up the balance sheet. It's good. Now, the bull thesis here is pretty straightforward. Reynolds is the dominant player in nearly every category where it competes. They have 94% market share in freezer paper, 64% market share in that aluminum foil I talked about, 59% in wax paper, it's ours too, 51% in parchment paper, 43% in foam dishes, 22% in outdoor trash bags, 22% in party cups. And when they're not number one, well, they're number two. Like in regular garbage bags, where their hefty brand has 20% market share, up 2 full percentage points last year. That kind of share take is almost unheard of in the consumer packaged goods sector. We've been hearing that Clorox was desperately fighting for share in trash bags. Well, now we know it was Reynolds they were fighting. On top of that, Reynolds gets 45% of its sales and about a quarter of its profits from private label. Those are the knockoffs, the store brand version of these products. We know consumers flock to private label during recessions. They always have. Nationally branded stuff starts to feel too expensive. But Reynolds wins either way. Plus, they're the exclusive private label supplier to Amazon for this stuff, which I think could be huge in an era where people are increasingly buying household supplies online rather than going to the store. Remember, Amazon was a miss on the bottom line. The top line was extraordinary tonight. So let's understand, we're not talking about anything wrong with Amazon when it comes to selling Reynolds' products. Best of all, this one's blissfully uncomplicated. It's an extremely low-cost, vertically integrated producer, sells roughly 98% of its merchandise here in the United States, stop worrying about the dollar, makes it more attractive during this period of turmoil in the global economy, and maybe down the road it means they have a lot of room to expand overseas. High-quality American consumer products still tend to be pretty darn popular in the rest of the world. Now, we know Barclays, very good house on these particular stocks, this kind of stocks, has been pounding the table on this one. They published a piece arguing that Reynolds could have best-in-class earnings growth over the course of 2020 and 2021. I thought the projections seemed pretty convincing. Plus, obviously, Reynolds is perfect for this moment. Their categories, trash bags, food bags, disposable dishware, aluminum foil, they're all on fire as millions of people are forced to stay at home and cook for themselves, as we heard from Campbell's Soup last night. According to Nielsen data, remember Nielsen, incredibly important for ratings things, trash bags are up 15% over the last 4 weeks of the data. That's extraordinary. Food bags are up nearly 37%. Disposable dishware is up 8%. And aluminum foil, get this, it is up an astonishing 44%. Those are insane growth numbers. Obviously not sustainable, but let's take them where we can get them. The whole industry is seeing huge volume growth, and Reynolds in particular has real pricing power right now. However, it's not a perfect story by any means. Reynolds reports next week. I expect a phenomenal quarter, but some of that's already priced in the stock after that run. The thing is, the situation is temporary. Longer term, Reynolds has a lot of trouble generating revenue growth. They're not exactly a big innovator. I mean, think about the products they make. If you believe Americans will keep avoiding restaurants until there's a coronavirus vaccine, then the growth could hold up through next year. But long term, it's simply just, let's admit, it's not sustainable. Second, Reynolds does have something I don't like. It has a two-tiered ownership structure where the public shareholder simply won't have control over the company. Instead, it's owned by this outfit called Graham Hart. Now, that's a billionaire. It's a billionaire from New Zealand, the guy who runs the private equity firm that took Reynolds public. Remember, this is a leveraged buyout story, and those don't have the best track records. Yes, we know. There's Burlington Stores. You know, I like that one. Dollar General's been one of the best. HCA. But you always have to think about it when it's PE. This is Graham Hart's company. You're just along for the ride. Still, I think there's a lot to like here, and the stock sells for just 18 times next year's earnings estimates. Makes it remarkably cheap compared to its peers. Clorox reports tomorrow 27 times earnings. Colgate's 23 times earnings. Procter, 23 times earnings. This is only 18. Now, those have much higher dividends, and they've got a much longer track record. Reynolds supports a 1.9% yield. Bottom line, given the low valuation versus its other competitors, I think Reynolds is attractive here. But the company reports its first quarter out of the gate next week, and the stock is run. So what do you do? I like this. I recommend putting on half your position here and then wait and buy more if it pulls back below 30 after the earnings. Let's go to Daniel in New York. Daniel.
Hello, hello, and booyah from Brooklyn, New York, Mr. Kramer. How are you?
Oh, my neighbor, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for taking my call. It's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
Good, good. Well, I've been building a position in a global medical device and food packaging company set to report earnings in May. And I know during times of uncertainty, fundamentals are crucial, and now more than ever, behind any investment decision. What do you think of Amcor, boss man?
I think that's a real good company. I love consistent companies. That are just closures and, you know, just things for food, things for beverage. That is just a really good company. I'm glad you mentioned that to me. I should be doing a piece about it. In this environment, Amcor is right. Let's go to Adam in New York. Adam.
Hey, Jim. Adam from New York. I own Aficionado Coffee Roasters. We supply several markets, including the hospitality space. Question for you. While U.S. Foods took a big hit from the hospitality sector, I see expansion for them in the grocery and healthcare.
Not enough. Not enough. I don't want anything to do with food service. It's just too hard an industry right now. I don't want to touch it. All the different food companies I have that have anything in food service, it's just not good enough. I say no. Tariq in California. Tariq.
Hey, Jim. How's it going? Tariq here from Los Angeles.
All right. Good to have you on the show. What's going on?
Calling about Coty stock,
C-O-T-Y. No, we're best of breed players. Yeah, absolutely. Could the spike go to take over over? Yeah, but you know what? We are people who believe in Procter, okay? We believe in Kimberly. We will like Clorox if it comes down tomorrow. We own Clorox and Colgate for the Charitable Trust, not Coty. Please, step up in quality, not down in time of recession. There's a lot, I think, to like when it comes to the new Reynolds, R-E-Y-N. Buy some now, and if it pulls back, buy more. Much more Mad Money ahead. It's COVID-19 nudges companies toward the cloud. How is an outfit like Juniper Networks holding up? I'm going to talk to the CEO. Then hedge funds have met their match, and I'm going to explain why. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Kramer. What does the pandemic mean for the networking equipment space? On the one hand, the emergence of the stay-at-home economy has been huge for the cloud, which requires tons of network hardware to run. But on the other hand, look, when you have a global recession, I mean, come on, companies tend to get a lot more cautious about spending, even for technology. So which is it? Consider the case of Juniper Networks, okay? Juniper came roaring back to the 20s this week, up more than 30% in the course of 1 month. Like many other stocks, then on Tuesday night, the company reported what looked to be a decent quarter, and the stock got slammed. While Juniper delivered a tiny top and bottom line miss thanks to some supply chain challenges, management's guidance for the next quarter, to me, it looked really solid. At a time when so many companies have withdrawn their forecast, solid is good. The analysts loved the quarter. Investors had a different reaction. Stock dropped nearly 4% yesterday before losing another 6.5% today. The reason? I think Juniper is really a victim of high expectations. Stock ran up into the quarter, so anything less than perfect was going to be a problem. Even after the sell-off, Juniper's only back to where it was trading just 2 weeks ago. I mean, maybe this was just a complete round trip. It'd be a buying opportunity. Let's check in with Rami Rahim. He's the CEO of Juniper Networks. Get a better read on the company's quarter and where it's headed. Mr. Rahim, welcome to Mad Money. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here.
All right. So first, I mean, to me, you have almost 4% yield. You surprised the upside. At the same time, I'm wondering whether people, even in your own, you know, I've got to tell you, even in your own handouts, you did talk about basically about how Juniper is back. So why don't you tell me where Juniper went and why you say they're back and how you're doing?
Certainly. You know, we have been on a transformation journey over the last year or so. And we started to see the results of that transformation, the focus on cloud, the focus on 5G, on security, starting to pay off in Q4. And Q1 was a great quarter from a booking standpoint. We saw 10% year-over-year growth across all of our geo regions, and growth across all of our customer segments. What we were impacted by are the global supply chain constraints that make it very difficult for us to build and ship our products, but we're slowly but surely working through all those challenges. And I actually expect to be at close to 100% capacity by the end of this quarter. So by all means, I'm actually quite proud of the results we delivered in Q1.
Well, also, I think that Satya Nadella set a good example last night on Microsoft talking about work from home and that not everybody is a loser from work from home. Some companies are winners. I have to believe that this is Juniper's time from that respect.
There is no doubt that this pandemic has been a reminder of just how critical the work we do at Juniper. In many ways, we are the keepers of the global network. We help to build the internet along with our peers, and we're delivering the network technology that's enabling us to move the economy along, to work from home, to for our kids to be educated at home, for us to conduct e-commerce. So I've always had a very strong sense of responsibility for the work that we do at Juniper, Jim. But I have to say that that sense has gotten even greater as we go through these trying times.
All right. So, Rami, when you go through the handout, I've got to admit, I mean, I'm not what we call a generalist. And there's a chart that I said, OK, I'm just going to surrender. The Contrail SD-WAN solution for enterprise branch was a little bit beyond my ken, but maybe you can give us an example of a customer we might know and explain how this works for them.
Well, we're certainly leveraging our technology today to help those on the front lines of this battle against the virus do their work, to help patients, to educate our children. A great example of how we are leveraging our technology, security, and what we define as the AI-driven enterprise, the essentially a networking solution that drives itself, that heals itself, that operates itself, would be Dartmouth College, a great customer of ours. They've had to pivot to a complete online education system, and they moved 6,000 students online in a matter of 2 weeks, and I don't think they could have done it without the services and the solutions that Juniper offers them.
Well, that's incredible. I mean, I have to believe that it is going to be a problem for so many colleges, and they won't know who to turn to. How did they know to go to Juniper?
Well, I have to say, this is our strength. I mean, we were born as innovators for the high-scale, mission-critical, highly automated network, and college campuses are an ideal environment for Juniper to shine. Now, we have, over the last year or so, been embarking on this strategy to deliver the AI-driven enterprise for the next decade. We bought a company called Mist Systems just a year ago. Mist reported a record quarter in the Q1 timeframe, and it's precisely because of this cloud-delivered AI-driven engine that is resonating so much with our customers. In fact, I announced in the last earnings call that because of Mist, in conjunction with our traditional Juniper products for switching, we managed to land 3 new Fortune 10 accounts with this technology and the solutions we're offering.
Now, I also know that this is a very tough time for a lot of companies. Judging from what I'm hearing from you, you're not a company that's going to have to lay off people. You can be able to pledge that you can keep people.
We don't plan on laying off anybody. We actually saw a great Q1. Momentum looking at going into Q2 was solid. As I mentioned, our booking strength was fantastic. We posted 17% year-over-year growth in the cloud segment, 5% year-over-year growth in enterprise, solid switching and security growth numbers. So at this point, we don't anticipate having to do anything like that.
And how about 5G tailwind when we get there?
Absolutely. 5G is going to be the next big inflection point in the telco segment. It's something that we're very much counting on. If anything, this COVID crisis has just been a reminder of how important the global network is, and mobility is one of the most important ways in which we connect to that network. And 5G is all around mobile, the next speed increase in mobile connectivity. We offer the network transport, the security, and the cloud infrastructure to power 5G.
Excellent. Well, this is great to have the reintroduction of Juniper, and I'm glad you did it on our show, Rami. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
That's Rami Rahim, the CEO of Juniper Networks. Almost 4% yield. Good story coming back. I like what I hear. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time! It's the lightning round. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Ski dance of the lightning round. Over Sharon in New York. Sharon!
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Okay, Sharon. How are you?
Good, good. Everything is well. Just wanted to see your thoughts on Royal Dutch Shell, RDSA.
I was worried. Royal Dutch Shell, I remember when they boosted the dividend, told everybody it was great. Yet last night, do you know that they cut their dividend for the first time since World War II? I say no, thank you. Let's go to Illinois. PJ in Illinois. PJ!
Hi, thank you. How are you, Mr. Kramer?
PJ doing fine. How about you?
I'm good. I just need some your valuable advice on a couple of stocks. Plays, children's plays.
We're not recommending any retailers here other than the watch retailers at Walmart, Amazon, Target, Costco, which I really like right here. Think good on the mask. And Home Depot. And if Home Depot goes up with 200, I'm going to get it to the Chapel Trust. Let's go to Anthony in Nevada. Anthony.
Hey, Kramer, got a big Las Vegas booyah for you.
I love Vegas. I love Vegas. What's up?
We love you. Thank you so much for everything that you and your staff do.
The staff makes me look good every night. Although, I put a little weight, but I really have, was my shirt wasn't tucked in. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I got a quick question. I bought some FNV Franco-Nevada at 107 at the beginning of the month. Since then, we've been working, on expanding my position. Today, we're at about 132. Should I keep growing my position, wait for a pullback?
I like Franco-Nevada very much, but, you know, I don't like it as much as Barrick. But FNV's been real, real good. I think you got a winner there. Matter of fact, if that comes back anymore, I'm going to tell you to buy some more. Hey, Wanda's on the phone from North Carolina. Wanda!
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
And thank you for all your guidance, especially in these difficult times. What is your opinion on investing in Cracker Barrel? The stocks seem to be moving some after the
DoorDash. I have always thought that Cracker Barrel's cheap. And during my pre-Jimmy Chill days, I used to love to go there for that apple pie, vanilla ice cream. And Regina, get this. She'll love this slice of cheese. She's our executive producer, and she's a masked man, woman, whatever. But right now, I want to stay away because what's happening... what's happening? My tie is in my pants there. What's happening is that people aren't driving that much, so we're going to hold back from Cracker Barrel. But I like them. Hey, how about we go to Jake in Kentucky? Jake!
Hi, Jim. I'm a college junior majoring in finance and accounting. My friends and I watch you all the time, and we'd like to get your thoughts on UPS stock during this pandemic and what you think will happen to it after the pandemic.
Well, first, see, younger people do watch. It's not just people, you know... Whatever. All right, UPS got new Kowtow May CEO. The quarter itself wasn't that good. De-risk the stock. If you can get it at 90, I would tell you that that's where you want to go. It's at 94, and I think the market's going lower. So that may be the way to do it. I'm going to Dennis in Michigan. Dennis!
Jim, thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
Much appreciated all you do for us. Action Alert member here as well. Thank you.
Oh, man. I'm telling you. You know that we've been raising cash.
I'm with you. Hey, all right. Your thoughts, please, on EXEL.
Excellence. We've liked this one the whole way. And sometimes we look smart and sometimes we look dumb, but we like the specs and we love the, you know, we like the cancer treatment specs. Okay. Hey, how about we go to Trent in Florida, please? Trent.
Hey, Kramer. How's it going, man?
Not bad. How about you?
Good. Thanks for taking the call. It's been about 14 years since I've called in, so I just want to send a quadruple booyah your way.
14 years. Holy cow. I didn't have hair then. What's up?
You look the same. I get to watch you every morning now that I'm home.
Trim?
You look the same.
Trim?
Yeah, my question for you is Raytheon Technologies, ticker symbol.
All right, stock's rolling over today. It's almost a 3% yield. I don't like aerospace right here. I do like defense, though. I say you get a little bit lower, and then we're good. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
When you're running a hedge fund, you need a strategy that lets you make money in good times and bad. And that's the whole point. Some fund managers are sleuths. They go looking for financial chicanery. Others make big macro bets, wagering against interest rates or big indices like the S&P 500. But the most common style is to make bets on individual sectors. You buy the hottest stocks on the way up, and you short the coldest ones on the way down. For example, my hedge fund in the late 90s, we owned the dot-coms on the way up. Then in March of 2000, we started shorting them out aggressively. You know, all the way down. When you do it right, you can make a name for yourself as a manager who's made big money when the averages were getting obliterated. When I did that in 2000, I hung up my spurs and went to Disney World. All right, well, not literally, but you know what I mean, kind of metaphorical. I retired from money management on a high note and focused on journalism, broadly defined, and also to run my charitable trust, which brings me to the last few months. For the first few weeks of the lockdown, it was a fabulous time for hedge fund managers who were betting against the market. The pandemic made many businesses totally uneconomic. So these managers just kept pressing their bet. They kept working and working and working. Think about it. The oil companies were struggling to make money at $30. Now they're fronting oil in the teens and briefly negative 37. They're going to bleed from the eyeballs at those prices. Same goes for the airlines. They're getting load factors that are 90% empty. Unheard of. Cruise ships. They're not even allowed to sail. Rail restaurants mandated to be shuttered. Home malls closed. You know what that's called? It's called shooting fish in a barrel. The short sellers couldn't help but make money. These companies, by nature, have a ton of debt. They have cash, but not enough cash to get through a pandemic. Without that cash, without access to capital, well, these companies were doomed. But the shorts forgot one thing. The shorts forgot that there's a Federal Reserve. You see, Fed Chairman Jay Powell was determined not to repeat the mistakes of his predecessors. During the financial crisis, the Fed waited way too long to take action because they were worried about moral hazard. First, they didn't even see it coming at all. You know, I mean, they actually thought that the economy was fine.
They know nothing!
Well, anyway, they were effectively afraid of rewarding bad behavior of the banks. But this time around, they don't have that problem. This time, deserves got nothing to do with it. It's not American Airlines' fault that people are afraid to fly now that the coronavirus is all over the place. It's not Royal Caribbean's fault that this thing's so darn contagious. It's not the oil industry's fault that the whole world had to go into a lockdown, so there's very little demand for crude. So the Fed decided to become a bank, a lender of last resort, just like the payroll protection program kept people from losing their jobs. They decided to effectively backstop pretty much any public company that was running out of money. All they had to do was say that they'd be willing to buy distressed debt, and a lot of these companies were able to borrow without even having to go to the Fed. Suddenly, the fish in the barrel disappeared. What were they replaced by? They were replaced by leaping, short-eating piranhas who wreaked their revenge this week when they devoured all the bears who had overstayed their welcome.
House of pain.
Think of it like this. If you were shorting the airline stocks that seemed destined for bankruptcy, then one day the Fed says, nope, they're going to live. What are you supposed to do? Well, we don't really know how to value them, but we do know they're worth more than they were before the Fed took action. Many short sellers doubted this initially. They held out, maybe for the airlines, maybe for the restaurants, perhaps for the retailers, certainly for the oils. Don't I know it? I had to don my Jimmy Choo togs to chide all the haters who despise me for saying, yes, oil stocks, I don't like them, but they bought them. Well, this week, the shorts were overmatched. Some hedge funds actually lost not just their whole year, but their whole enterprises last night after the close. I saw it happen. These shows who shorted stocks near the bottom, well, they had covered substantially higher prices, racking up hideous losses. Oh, what looked like the best shorts ever. especially the oils. Here's the thing. All the forced buying from short sellers has been the fuel for this last leg of the rally, and that's terrible fuel. Once all the shorts have covered, the fuel's gone. Hence, that's the reason, well, let's just say add them to the list of, I don't know the right price for the stocks of some of these companies that are right in the COVID-19 blast zone, many of which were asked about this evening. They're just too low a few weeks ago. Now they could be too high thanks to the short squeeze. Look at it this way. If we can get a vaccine next year, these stocks are indeed worth owning. Go book a cruise. I saw some prices for cruises. Hey, you know what? They clean them up and get the vaccine. You take the whatever. But it'll be the fastest vaccine ever developed. If it takes longer, the airlines and the retailers, the oils and the cruise lines, well, they're just going to head back down. To me, that's too hard. Why buy battleground stocks when you can simply stick to stocks of good companies with strong earnings that are coming down anyway, like Apple with a dividend boost and a great balance sheet? Forget bottom fishing. It's impossible to value these COVID-19 losers unless you're an epidemiologist. And even then, Dr. Epidemiologist, I wouldn't chance it. Stick with Cramer. Look, Apple is fine, but here's what's going on, I think. The tiff, with China is really heating up, and it's really hurting the semiconductor equipment stocks. And by nature, I also think it's going to hurt Apple by association. The president is just furious about what the Chinese have done in his eyes. And I've got to tell you, I think that it's the beginning of a new period of very harsh rhetoric between the two countries. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise I'll try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. I'll see you tomorrow. Markets in Turmoil with Scott Wapner is up next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.